Cassius Albalona killed my father. He stands over the man, swallowing before looking back up. But I forgive him. Why? Because he was protecting the world he knew. Because he was afraid. Victra pushes her way to the front of the circle, watching Severo, who speaks now as if it was meant for her, and her alone. We are the new age, the new world. And if we're to show the way, then we better damn well make it a better one. I am Severo Albarca, and I am no longer afraid. Chapter 55. The Ignoble House Barker. You're bloody damn manic, I tell Severo when we're alone in Virini's infirmary. Severo's holding his neck, laughing at himself. I kiss the top of his head. Bloody damn insane, you know that? Yeah, well, I stole that one from your playbook. What does that say about you?
That he's insane as well,
Mickey says from the corner. He's smoking his laced burners, purple smoke slithering from nostrils. Severo winces.
That slagging hurt. I can't even look sideways.
You sprained your neck, damaged the cartilage, lacerations in your larynx,
Dr. Virini says from behind her biometric scanner. She's a lithe, tan woman with that special small silence inside her, reserved for people who have seen both sides of hardship.
Just as I said when you came in. All these tools you use, Virini. Really, where's the art in it?
Virini rolls her eyes.
Another 10 kilos on your body, and you would have broken your neck, Severo. Count yourself lucky.
Good thing I took a shit before,
he grumbles.
Darrow's neck would have held up under the strain of 50 more kilos.
Mickey brags idly.
The tensile raising of his cervical...
Really? Virini says tiredly.
Can't you brag later, Mickey?
Merely observing my own mastery,
Mickey replies, giving me a little wink.
He enjoys pushing the gentle Virini's buttons. Since he's employed her help in his project, they've been spending most waking moments in his laboratory, much to Virini's chagrin.
Ow! Severo yelps as she prods the back of his spine. That's my body!
Sorry.
Pixie, I say. I almost broke my neck,
Severo complains.
Been there, done that. At least you didn't have to get whipped.
I'd rather have been whipped, he mutters, wincing as he tries to turn his neck.
Be better than this.
Not being whipped by Pax, I reply.
I saw the video. He wasn't swinging that hard.
Have you ever been whipped?
Did you see my back? You see my bloody damn eye at the Institute? Jackal had it plucked out with a knife.
Didn't see me whining.
I had my whole bloody damn body carved open, I say, as the doors hiss open and Mustang enters. Twice!
Oh, it always comes back to the slagging carving, Severo mutters, wiggling his fingers in the air.
I'm so bloody damn special. I had my bones peeled, my DNA spliced.
Do they always do this? Virini asks Mustang.
Seems like, Mustang says. Any chance I could bribe you to suture their mouths shut till they learn not to swear so much?
Mickey perks up.
Well, it's interesting you ask.
Severo interrupts him.
How's the gold holding up?
He asks Mustang.
You know.
Happy he still has a tongue, Mustang says. They're suturing his chest in the infirmary. He has some internal bleeding from blunt trauma, but he'll live.
You finally went to see him?
I ask.
I did.
She nods thoughtfully to herself. He was emotional. He wanted me to thank you, Severo. He says he knows he didn't deserve it.
Damn right he didn't, Severo mutters.
Seffi says the obsidian will leave him be, I say.
The obsidian?
Mustang asks, my statement pulling her from her thoughts. All of them. I laugh suddenly. I didn't even think about that.
What's that?
Several asks. She spoke for the Obsidian now, not just the Valkyrie. Wasn't a slip of the tongue. Pan-tribalism wasn't in place before the riot, I say. Must have used it to unite the other war chiefs under her direction.
So, she pulled a coup?
Sevra asks. I laugh. Seems like.
We'll see if it holds. Still, impressive,
Mustang says. They always told us never to let a good crisis go to waste. Mickey shivers. Obsidians playing politics.
So, all that out there, was that strategy, or was that real?
Mustang asks Sevro.
Dunno, Sevro shrugs. I mean, gotta stop the cycle somewhere. Sucks, but Dad's gone. No sense burning down the world to try and bring him back, you know? Cassius didn't kill Dad because he hated him. They were both soldiers doing what soldiers do.
Mustang shakes her head, at a loss for words. So she sets a hand on his shoulder, and he knows how impressed she is. The compliment of silence is as deep a one as she can give, and Severo favors her with a rare, unironic smile. One that disappears when the door opens and Victra comes in. She's red-eyed and agitated.
I need to talk to you, she says to Severo. Get out, Severo says when we don't move. Everyone!
We wait outside the door as Victra and Severo speak inside.
How long do you think it will take to make the journey?
Mustang asks. 49 days, I say, pulling Mickey back from the door where he cups his ear in an attempt to hear the happenings inside. Key is keeping the blues quiet.
49 days is a long time for my brother to make plans.
Beyond our hull, the worlds continue to turn. Reds are hunted. And though we've woken the spirit of the low colors and given this rebellion another victory, every day we spend crossing the distance to the core is another day that the Jackal can hunt our friends and the Sovereign can squelch the rebellions that plague her. My uncle's already gone. How many more will die before I return?
This won't heal everything, Mustang says. The Obsidian still killed 7 prisoners. My people are wary of this war. The consequences, particularly if Sephi now has united the tribes, that makes her dangerous.
And more useful, I say.
Until she disagrees with you again. This could go wrong at any moment.
She straightens as Mickey skitters back and the door to the infirmary opens. Severo and Victra come out, both wearing smiles.
What are you two grinning about? I ask.
Just this?
Severo thrusts out a House Jupiter Institute ring. It's loose on his finger. I squint at it, not understanding right away. His own ring is missing, and then I see it awkwardly jammed onto Victra's pinky.
She proposed, he says with delight.
What?
I sputter.
Mustang's eyebrows shoot up. Proposed? As in...
Yeah, boyo, Severo beams. We are getting hitched!
Severo and Victra marry 7 nights later in a small ceremony in the auxiliary hangar of the Morning Star. When Victra asked me to give her away after they broke the news to us, I couldn't speak. I hugged her then as I hug her now, before taking her arm and walking her through the small line of scrubbed and washed howlers and towering Telemannuses. It's the cleanest I've ever seen Severo, his unruly mohawk combed to the side as he stands before Mickey. It is custom to have a white give the benediction, but Victra laughed at the idea of tradition and asked Mickey. The violet's face glows now. too much makeup on the day, but he's a ray of light all the same. From carver to slaver to slave to wedding officiant, he's not had an easy road. But he's lovelier for it. He was delighted when Clan and Screwface asked him to join us for Severo's bachelor night, and he howled along with us as we kidnapped Severo from his room the night before and dragged him to the mess hall, where the howlers gathered to drink. The animosity stemming from the riot has not abated entirely, but the wedding brings a sense of nostalgic normalcy. Surrounded by the insanity of war, it's a special hope given, knowing life can go on. Though some sons gripe about the marriage of the Red Leader to a Gold, Victor's done enough to merit respect from the leaders within the sons, and the bravery she showed in storming the Morning Star with Seffi and me around Ilium has bought her their respect. She shed blood for them, with them, so my fleet is quiet, at peace. At least for tonight. I've never seen Severo so happy, nor so nervous as he was the hour before the ceremony when he combed his hair in my washroom. Not that you can do much with a mohawk. "Is this insane? It seemed like a good idea yesterday," he asked, staring at himself in the mirror. "And it's a good idea today, too," I told him. "You're not just saying that. Tell me the truth, man. I feel sick." "Before I married Io, I threw up." "Bullshit. Got it all over my uncle's boots." A twinge of pain as I remember he's gone. "Wasn't that I was afraid of making the wrong decision. I was afraid she was. Afraid of not living up to our expectations. But my uncle told me that it's women who see us better than we see ourselves. That's why you love Victra. That's why you fight with her. And that's why you deserve this." Severo squinted at me in the mirror. "Yeah, but your uncle was crazy. Everyone knows that." "Even company, then. We're all a little manic. Especially Victra. I mean, she'd have to be to marry you." He grinned. "Bloody damn right." And I rumpled his hair, hoping beyond all hope that they can have this little moment of happiness, and maybe more after that. It's the best any of us can hope for, really. "Wish Pops was here, though. I think he's laughing his ass off somewhere, that you have to stand on your tiptoes to kiss your bride," I said. "Always was a prick." Now Severo shifts from foot to foot as I hand Victra over to him, and he looks up into our eyes. "I'm not even there. None of us are. Not to them." The gentleness I see from the raging woman now is all it takes to know how much she loves him. It's not something she'd ever talk about. It's not her way. But the sharp edge she has for everything and everyone is dull tonight. Like she sees Severo as a refuge, a place where she can be safe. I rejoin Mustang as Mickey begins his flowery speech. It's not half so grandiloquent as I might have expected. The way Mustang nods along to the words, I know she must have helped him edit it down. Reading my mind, she leans over. "You should have heard the first draft. It was a spectacle." She sniffs me. "Are you drunk?" She looks back at the flushed howlers and teetering Telemanuses. "Are they all drunk?" "Shh," I say, and hand her a flask. "You're too sober." Mickey is finishing the ceremony. "A compact that can be broken only by death. I pronounce you Severo and Victra Barker." "Julii," Severo corrects quickly. "Hers is the Elder House." Victra shakes her head down at him. "He said it right." "But you're a Julii," he replies, confused. "Yesterday I was. Today I'd rather be a Barker. Presuming you don't have a problem with that, and I don't have to become proportionally diminutive." "It'd be lovely," Severo says. cheeks glowing as Mickey continues and Severo and Victra turn to face their friends.
Then I present you to your fellows and the worlds as Severo and Victra of the Martian House, Barca.
The ceremony may have been small, but the celebration is anything but. Fleet-spanning, even. If my people know one thing, it is how to survive hardship with celebration. Life's not just a matter of breathing, it's a matter of being. Word of Severo's speech and his hanging spread through the ships, stitching the wounds back together. But this day is the one that matters, the one that reaffirms the joy of life throughout my fleet. Dances are held on the smallest corvettes, on the destroyers and torch ships, and the Morning Star. Flights of ripwings buzz bridges in celebratory formation. Swill and society liquors flow among the milling crowds, which gather in hangars to sing and dance around weapons of war. Even Kavax, so stubborn in his fear of chaos and his prejudice against the Obsidians, dances with Mustang, drunkenly hugging Severo and Victra, and clumsily attempting to forget the ballroom dreck of gold dancers, and learn those of my people from a full-figured red with a laughing face and a mechanic's grease under her nails. With them is Scyther, the awkward orange who so impressed me a year and a half ago, in the garages of the Pax. He only just finished Mustang's special project this morning. Now he's drunk, and turning his ungainly body around on the dance floor, as Kavax roars approval. Daxo shakes his head at his father's antics, while sitting in reserve on the side, as always. I share a drink with him. "It's wine," I say.
"Thank Jove,"
he replies, delicately taking the glass. "Your people keep trying to give me some kind of engine solvent." He scans his datapad warily. "I've got a holiday on security," I say. "This isn't a gold party." He laughs. "Thank Joe for that, then, as well." Finally, he takes a sip from his wine.
"Venusian atolls," he says. "Very nice."
"Broke had good taste." "Your father is a sight," I say, nodding to the dance floor, where the big man sways along with two reds.
"He's not the only one,"
Daxo replied shrewdly, following my eyes to Mustang, who's now being spun about by Severo. The woman's face is aglow with life, or maybe it's the alcohol. Hair sweaty and plastered on her forehead.
"She loves you, you know," Daxo says. "She's just afraid of losing you. So she holds you far away."
He smiles to himself. "Funny how we are, isn't it?"
"Daxo, why aren't you dancing?" Victor says, striding up to him. "So proper all the time. Up, up!"
She hauls him up and pushes him onto the dance floor, then collapses into his chair.
"My feet. Raided Antonia's closet. Forgot she's got pigeon feet."
I laugh, and Clown stumbles up to us, heavily drunk.
"Victor, Daro, a question. Do you think Pebble is interested in that man?"
he asks me, leaning against one of the tables as he chugs down another glass of wine. His teeth are already purple.
"The tall one?" Victor asks.
Pebble's dancing with a grey captain.
"She seems to fancy him."
"He's terribly handsome," Clown says. "Good teeth, too."
"I suppose you could always cut in," I say.
"Well, I wouldn't want to seem desperate."
"Joe forbid," Victor says.
"I think I'll cut in."
"I think it's a good idea," she says. "But you should bow first, to be polite."
"Oh, then it's settled. I'll go right now."
He pours another glass of wine.
"After another drink."
I take the wine from him and push him on his way. Holiday appears in the doorframe to watch Clown's awkward interruption. He's bowing to Pebble and sweeping back his hand dramatically.
Oh, hell! He actually did it!
Victra snorts champagne through her nose.
You should do the same with Mustang.
Think she's trying to steal my husband away.
Husband?
That's a weird word. It's a weird world.
Isn't it, though? Wife.
Who'd have thought? I look her up and down. On you, it seems to fit. I put my arm around her. It seems to fit perfectly. She smiles radiantly.
Sir,
Holiday says, coming up to us.
Holiday, come to have a drink?
I glance over at her, smile dying when I see the expression that marks her face. Something has happened.
What is it?
She motions me away from Victor.
It's the jackal,
she says quietly, so as not to spoil the mood.
He's on the comm for you. Direct link.
What's the delay? I ask.
6 seconds.
On the dance floor, Severo's spinning with Mustang clumsily, laughing because neither knows the dance the reds around them perform. Her hair is dark from sweat on her temples. Her eyes are light with the joy of the moment. None of them feel the sudden dread in me, in the world beyond. I don't want them to. Not tonight.
Chapter 56 In Time. He sits in a simple chair in the center of my circular training room, wearing a coat of white with a gold line to either side of his high collar. The stars above his glowing hologram are cold stains of light through the duraglass dome. This room was built to train for war, and so it is here that I will grant my enemy an audience. I will not let him pervert this ship where Roke lived and where my friends celebrate by seeing or being any place else. Even though he's millions of kilometers away, I can nearly smell the pencil-shaving scent of him, hear the vast silence with which he fills rooms as I stand before his digital image. It's so lifelike, if it did not glow, I would think him here. The background behind him is blurred. He watches me enter the room. No smile on his face, no false pleasantness, but I can tell he's amused. His silver stylus spins in his one hand, the only sign of his agitation. Hello, Reaper. How are the festivities? I try not to let my discomfort show. Of course he knows of the wedding. He has spies in our fleet. How close they are to me, I cannot tell. But I don't let the thought spread malignantly through me. If he could reach out and hurt us here, he already would have. What do you want? I ask. You called me last time. I thought I should return the favor, particularly considering the message I sent of your uncle. Did you receive it? I say nothing. After all, when you arrive at Mars, the cannons will speak for us. We may never see each other again. Strange, isn't that? Did you see Roke before he died?
I did.
And did he weep for your forgiveness?
No.
The jackal frowns.
I thought he would.
It's easy to fool a romantic. To think he was right there when I took his girl. You went running by in the hall screaming Tactus's name, and he looked up in confusion. I pushed a sliver of Quinn's skull deeper into her brain with my scalpel. I thought about letting her live with brain damage, but the thought of her drooling everywhere made me sick. You think he still would have loved her if she drooled?
There's a sound at the door, out of the camera's capture range. Mustang's followed me from the wedding. Taking in the scene, she watches quietly. I should turn off the hollow, leave this creature to himself,
but I can't seem to part with him. The same curiosity that brought me here now anchors me to this spot. Roke wasn't perfect, but he cared about gold. He cared about humanity. He had something he would die for, and that makes him a better man than most, I say. It's easy to forgive the dead, the jackal replies. I'd know. A tiny spasm of humanity moves across his lips. He may never say it, but the very tone of his voice tells me he is not without regret. I know he wanted his father's approval, but could it actually be that he misses the man? That he's forgiven his father in death and now mourns him? He pulls a short gold baton up from his lap. With the press of a button, the baton extends to a scepter, one with the skull of a jackal overtop the pyramid of the society. I had it commissioned for him more than a year ago. I've not parted with your gift, he says. He traces the head of the jackal. All my life, I've been given lions. Nothing of my own. What does it say about me, that my greatest enemy knows me better than any friend? You the scepter, I the sword, I say, ignoring his question. That was the plan. I gave it to him because I wanted him to feel loved, to feel like I was his friend. And I would have been, then. I would have helped him change like Mustang did, like Cassius might. Is it what you thought it would be? I ask. What? Your father's seat. He frowns, considering which tack to take. No, he says eventually. No, it is not what I expected. You want to be hated, don't you? I ask. That's why you killed my uncle when you didn't need to. It gives you purpose. That's why you called me, to feel important. But I don't hate you. Liar. I don't. I killed Pax and your uncle and Lorne. I pity you. He recoils. Pity? Arch-governor of all Mars, one of the most powerful men in all the worlds, with the might to do anything you like. And it's not enough. Nothing has ever been enough for you, nor will it be. Adrius, you're not trying to prove yourself to your father, to me, to Virginia, to the Sovereign. You're trying to matter to yourself, because you're broken inside, because you hate what you are. You wish you were born like Claudius, like Virginia. You wish you were like me. Like you? He asks with a sneer. A filthy red? I'm no red. I show him my hands, bare of sigils. It disgusts him. Not even evolved enough to have a color, Darrow. Just a Homo sapiens playing in the realm of gods. Gods? I shake my head. You're no god. You're not even a gold. You're just a man who thinks a title will make him great. Just a man who wants to be more than he actually is. But all you really want is love. Isn't that right? He snorts in derision. Love is for the weak. The only thing you and I have in common is our hunger. You think that I cannot be satisfied, that I always yearn for more. But look in the mirror, and you'll see the same man staring back at you. Tell your little red friends what you like, but I know you lost yourself among us. You yearned to be gold. I saw it in your eyes at the Institute. I saw that fever on Luna when I proposed that we should rule. I saw it when you rode that triumphal chariot up to the steps of the Citadel. It's that hunger that makes us forever alone. And there he strikes the core of me. That abyssal fear that the darkness made my reality. the fear of being alone, of never finding love again. But then Mustang steps out to join me.
"You're wrong, brother," she says.
The jackal leans back at the sight of his sister.
Darrow had a wife, a family he loved. He had just a little bit and he was happy.
You had everything, and you were miserable. And you always will be, because you covet. His foundation of calm begins to crumble.
That's why you killed Father and Quinn, why you killed Pax.
But this isn't a game, brother. This isn't one of your mazes.
Do not call me brother, whore.
You are no sister of mine.
Opening your legs for a mongrel, for a beast of burden. Are the obsidians next? I bet they are all queued up already. You are a disgrace to your color and to our house.
I move angrily toward his hollow, but Mustang puts a hand in the center of my chest and turns back to our brother.
You think you never had love, brother? But Mother loved you. If she loved me, why didn't she stay? He says sharply. Why did she leave?
I don't know, Mustang says. But I loved you too, and you threw that away. You were my twin. We were bound for life. There are tears in her eyes.
I defended you for years. Then I find out that it was you who had Claudius killed.
She blinks through the tears, shaking her head as she finds her resolve.
I cannot forgive that. I cannot. You had love and you lost it, brother. That is your curse.
I step forward till I'm even with Mustang. Adrius, we are coming for you. We will break your ships. We will storm Mars. We will burrow through the walls of your bunker. We will find you, and we will bring you to justice. And when you hang from the gallows, when the door beneath you opens, when your feet do the devil's dance, then you will realize in that moment that this has all been for nothing, because there will be no one left to pull your feet. The pale light of the hollow vanishes as we close the connection, leaving us to the glass ceiling and the stars beyond.
Are you all right?
I ask Mustang. She nods, wiping her eyes.
Didn't expect to start crying like that. Sorry.
To be fair, I think I cry more. But forgiven. She tries a smile.
Do you actually think we can do this, Darrow?
Her eyes are red, the mascara she wore for the wedding stained by the tears. Her running nose is a ruddy pink, but I've never seen beauty as deep as hers is now. All the rawness of life flows through her, all the cracks and fears that make her who she is worn in her eyes. So imperfect and rough that I want to hold her and love her as long as I can. And for once, she lets me.
We have to. You and I have a whole life ahead of us, I say, pulling her into me.
It seems impossible a woman like this could ever want to be held by me. But she puts her head in my chest as I wrap my arms around her, and I remember how perfectly we fit together as we hold each other and the stars and minutes pass distantly.
We should return to the party, she eventually says to me.
Why?
I have everything I need right here.
I look down at the crown of her golden head and see the darkness of her roots.
I breathe in the full scent of her.
If it ends tomorrow, or in 80 years, I could breathe her the rest of my life. But I want more. I need more. I tilt her slender jaw up with my hand,
so that she's looking at me. I was going to say something important, something memorable, but I've forgotten it in her eyes. That gulf that divided us is still there, filled with questions and recrimination and guilt. But that's only part of love, part of being human. Everything is cracked. Everything is stained except the fragile moments that hang crystalline in time and make life worth living. Chapter 57 Luna. The Rubicon beacons are a sphere of transponders, each as large as two obsidian, floating in space 1,000,000 kilometers beyond Earth's core, encircling the innermost domain of the Sovereign. For 500 years, no foreign fleet has passed beyond their borders. Now, 2 months and 3 weeks after news of the destruction of the invincible Sword Armada reaches the core, 8 weeks after I proclaimed that we sailed on Mars, 17 days after the Sovereign's declaration of martial law in all society cities, the Red Armada approaches Luna, sailing past the Rubicon beacons without firing a shot. Telemannus' torch ships race ahead at the vanguard to clear mines and scan for any traps left by society forces. They're followed by Orion's obsidian-filled heavy destroyers, painted with the all-seeing eyes of the ice spirits. Then by the Julii fleet, with Victor's weeping sun adorning the heavy dreadnought, the Pandora, the forces of the Reformers. The daughters-in-law of Lorne Au Arcos come for justice, and the gold and black ships bearing the line of Augustus, led by the battle-scarred Dejah Thoris. And finally, my own vessels, led by the greatest ship ever built and stolen, the indomitable white Morning Star, painted with a 7-kilometer-long red scythe on her port and starboard sides. The holes we carved in her with our claw drills are not mended all through the ship, but the armor has been replaced along the outer hull. The Pax died to give her to us. And what a prize she is. We ran out of paint on the bottom scythe, so it's a sloppy crescent moon, the symbol of House Loon. The men think it's a good omen. An accidental promise to Octavia Auloon that we have her marked. War has come to the core. For 3 days they've known I was coming. We could not cover our entire approach from their senses, but the chaos around the planet shows how unprepared they are for it. It is a civilization in turmoil. The Ash Lord has arrayed the Scepter Armada, the pride of the core, around Luna in defensive formation. Caravans of trading vessels from the Rim clutter the Via Appia above the northern lunar hemisphere, while backlogs of civilian vessels stagger their way back along the Via Flaminia, waiting to pass through inspection on the colossal Flaminius astrodock before their descent into Earth's atmosphere. But as we cross the Rubicon beacons and encroach farther into lunar space, the vessels hurl themselves into a frenzy, many bursting from their ordered queue to race for Venus, others trying to pass the docks entirely and burn for Earth. They flare as silver and white society fighters and fast-moving gun frigates shred engines and hulls. Dozens of vessels die to maintain order. We're outnumbered, still vastly outgunned, but initiative is on our side, and so is the fear that all civilizations have of barbarian invaders. The first dance of the Battle of Luna has begun. Attention, unidentified fleet. A brittle copper voice echoes through an open frequency. This is Luna Defense Command. You are in possession of stolen property and in violation of societal deep space boundary regulations. Identify yourself and intentions with all haste. Fire a long-range missile at the Citadel, I say. That's 1,000,000 kilometers away.
the Gunblue says. It'll be shot down.
He bloody well knows that,
Severo says.
Follow the order.
It took a campaign of counterintelligence not just in our transmissions to Sun's cells throughout the Corps, but among our ships and commanders, to bring us here, unnoticed. The Jackal will not be in position to help the Sovereign, nor will the Classes Venetum, the Fourth Fleet of Venus, or the Classes Libertas, the Fifth Fleet of the Inner Belt, which the Sovereign sent to Mars to aid the Jackal. At full burn, all the ships will be 3 weeks away at current orbit. The lie worked. The spies in my ship leaked misinformation about our plans, just as I'd hoped. That is the peril of a solar empire. All the power in all the worlds means nothing if it is in the wrong place. 20 minutes later, my missile is shot down by orbital defense platforms. New direct link incoming, the Comblue says behind me. It's got Praetorian tags. Main hollow, I say. A gold Praetorian with an aquiline face and grey at the temples of his short cropped hair materializes in front of me. The image will appear on all bridges and holoscreens in the fleet. Darrow of Lycos, he asks in an impeccably well-bred lunar accent. Are you in possession of Imperium over this warfleet? What need have I of your traditions? I ask. Very well, the gold says, maintaining propriety even now. I am Arch-Legate Lucius Al-Sejanus of the Praetorian Guard, First Cohort. I know of Sejanus. He's an eerie, efficient man. I am come with a diplomatic envoy to your coordinates, he says dryly. I request you stay further aggression and give my shuttle access to your flagship so we might relate the Sovereign and Senate's intentions in... Denied, I say. I beg your pardon? If any Society ship comes toward my fleet, they will be fired upon. If the Sovereign wishes to speak with me, then let her do it herself, not through a lackey's mouth. Tell the hag we're here for war, not words. My ship throbs with activity. Told only 3 days ago of our true destination, the men are filled with madcap excitement. There's something immortal to attacking Luna. Win or lose, we've forever stained the legacy of gold. And in the minds of my men, and in the chatter we pick up over the comms from the core planets and moons, there is real fear in the air. For the first time in centuries, gold has shown weakness. Breaking the Sword Armada has spread the rebellion faster than my speeches ever could. Soldiers salute as they pass me in the hall, making their way to their troop carriers and leechcraft. The squads are predominantly red and defected greys, but I see green battle techs, red machinists, and obsidian scouts and heavy infantry in each capsule as well. I resend the shuttle flight clearance order to the Morning Star's flight controller with my authorization code. It's accepted and cleared. Most days I'd trust the order to stand on its own, but today I want to be sure, so I make my way to the bridge to confirm in person. The Red Marine captain responsible for the security of the bridge shouts his men to attention when I enter. More than 50 armored soldiers salute me. The blues in their pits continue in their operations. Orion's at the forward observation post where Rogue once stood. Meaty hands clasped behind her back, skin nearly as dark as her black uniform. She turns to me with those large, pale eyes, and that nasty white smile. Reaper, the fleet is nearly ready. I greet her warmly, and join her in looking out through the glass viewports. How does it look? The Ash Lord is pulled up in defensive array. He seems to think we intend an iron rain before moving him off the moon. Sharp assumption, he has no reason to come to us. All the rest of the ships in the Corps will be headed here. When they get here, we'll be the cockroach pinned between the ground and the hammer. He's assumed correctly we'll rush the engagement.
The Ash Lord knows war, I say.
That he does.
She glances at her datapad. What's this I hear about a flight clearance for a Sarpedon-class shuttle from HB Delta?
I knew she'd notice, and I don't want to explain myself to her now. Not everyone is as compassionate toward Cassius as I, even with Severo sparing his life.
I'm sending an emissary to meet with a group of senators.
I lie.
We both know you're not, she says. What's going on?
I step closer so no one can overhear us. If Cassius remains in the fleet while we go to war, someone will try to get past the guards and slit his throat. There's too much hate for the Bologna for him to stay here.
Then hide him in another cell. Don't release him, she says. He'll just go back to them, rejoin the war.
He won't. She looks behind me to ensure we're not being overheard. If the Obsidians find out, this is exactly why I didn't tell anyone, I say. I'm releasing him. You clear that shuttle. You let it go. I need you to promise me. Her lips make a thin, hard line. Promise me.
She nods and looks back to Luna.
As always, I feel she knows more than she lets on.
I promise. But you be careful, boy. You still owe me a parrot, remember?
I meet Severo in the hall outside the high-security prisoner lockup. He's sitting atop the orange cargo crate and its floating grav rig, drinking from a flask, left hand rested on the scorcher in his leg holster. The hall's quieter than it should be, given its guests, but it's in the main hangars and gun stations and engines and armories where my ship pulses with activity. Not here, on the prison deck.
What took you?
Severo asks. He's in his black fatigues, too, stretching uncomfortably against his new combat vest. His boots click together as his legs dangle.
Orion was asking questions on the bridge about the flight clearance.
Shit. She figure out we were letting the Eagle fly?
She promised to let it go.
She better. And she better keep her trap shut. If Seffi finds out.
I know, I say. And so does Orion. She won't tell her.
If you say so.
Severo wrinkles his face and downs the last of his flask as he glances down the hall. Mustang approaches.
Guards are redeployed, she says. Marine patrols are diverted from Hall 13C. Cassius is clear to the hangar.
Good. You sure about this? I ask, touching her hand. She nods.
Not entirely, but that's life.
Severo, you're still prime.
Severo hops down from the crate.
Obviously. I'm here, ain't I?
Severo helps me maneuver the grav rig through the brig's doors. The guard station is deserted. Food wrappers and tobacco dip cups, all that remain of the Sun's team who guarded the prisoners. Severo follows me from the entrance down into the decagon room of duroglass cells, whistling the tune he made for Pliny.
If your leg's a little wet,
he sings as we stop before Cassius's cell. Antonia's cell is across from his. Her face swollen from her beating, she watches us hatefully without moving from her cell's cot. Severo knocks on the duroglass separating us from Cassius.
Wakey, wakey, Sir Bologna!
Cassius wipes his eyes of sleep and sits up from his bed, taking in Severo and I, but addressing Mustang.
What's going on?
We've arrived at Luna, I say.
Not Mars?
Cassius asks in surprise.
Antonia shifts in her cot behind us, just as startled by the news as Cassius appears to be.
Not Mars.
You're actually attacking Luna,
Cassius murmurs.
You're insane. You don't have the ships.
How do you even plan to get past the shields?
Don't you worry about that, sweetheart, Severo says. We got our ways. But soon hot metal's gonna be sliding through this ship, and someone's likely gonna come in here and pop you in the head. Darrow here gets all sad thinking of that, and I don't like sad, Darrow.
Cassius just stares at us like we're mad. He still doesn't get it.
When you said you were done with this war, did you mean it? I ask.
I don't understand.
It's pretty bloody damn simple, Cassius, Mustang says. Yes or no?
Yes, Cassius says from his cot.
Antonius sits up to watch.
I am. How could I not be? It's taken everything from me. All for people who only care about themselves.
Well, I ask Severo.
Oh, please, Severo snorts. You think that's gonna satisfy me?
What game are you playing at? Cassius asks.
Ain't no game, boyo. Darrow wants me to let you out.
Cassius's eyes widen.
But I need to know you aren't gonna come try to kill us. You're all about honor and blood debts, so I need you to swear an oath so I can sleep soundly.
I killed your father. You really should stop reminding me of that.
If you stay here, we can't protect you, I say. I believe the worlds still need Cassius Albalona, but there's no place for you here, and there's no place for you with the Sovereign.
If you give me your oath, on your honor, that you will leave this war behind you, I'll give you your freedom.
Antonia bursts out laughing behind us.
This is hilarious. They're toying with you, Cassie, just plucking you like a harp. Be quiet, you poisonous little brat, Mustang snaps.
Cassius eyes Mustang, judging our proposal. You agree to this?
It was my idea, she says.
None of this is your fault, Cassius. I was cruel to you, and I'm sorry for that. I know you wanted revenge on Darrow, on me.
Not on you. Not ever on you.
Mustang flinches.
But I know you've seen what revenge brings. I know you've seen what Octavia really is. What my brother really is. You're only guilty of trying to protect your family. You don't deserve to die here.
You really want me to go? He asks.
I want you to live, she says. And yes, I want you to go. And never come back.
But... go where? He asks.
Anywhere but here.
Cassius swallows, searching himself. Not just seeking to understand what he owes honor or duty, but trying to imagine a world without her. I know the horrible loneliness he feels now, even as we give him freedom. Life without love is the worst prison of all. But he licks his lips and nods to Mustang, not to me.
On my father, on Julian, I promise not to raise arms against any of you.
If you let me go, I will leave, and I will never come back.
You coward!
Antonia punches the glass of her cell.
You gory damn sniveling little whipped worm!
I nudge Severo. Still your call.
He tugs the hairs of his little goatee. Ah, hell. You better be right about this, you pricklicks.
Digging into his pocket, he pulls out the magnetic key card, and Cassius's cell door unlocks with a heavy thunk.
Then there's a shuttle waiting for you in the auxiliary hangar on this level, Mustang says evenly. It's been cleared to fly, but you have to go now.
That means now, shithead,
Severo says.
They'll pop you in the back of the head, Antonia is saying. You traitor!
Cassius puts a tentative hand on the cell door, as if he's afraid he'll push and find it locked and we'll laugh at him, and all the hope we've given him will be ripped away. But he has faith, and, stealing his face, he pushes. The cell's door swings outward. Cassius walks out to join us. He holds out his hands to be cuffed.
You're a free man,
Severo slurs, wrapping the orange box heavily with his knuckles. But you gotta get in the box so we can wheel you out of here without anyone seeing. Of course. He pauses and turns back to me to extend a hand. I take it. A strange feeling of kinship rising in me. Goodbye, Dara. Good luck, Cassius. And for Mustang, he pauses, wanting to reach out and wrap his arms around her, but she merely sticks out a hand, cold even now to him. He looks at her hand and shakes his head, not accepting her gesture. We'll always have Luna, he says. Goodbye, Cassius. Goodbye. He goes to the crate, which Severo has opened, and looks inside. Hesitating there, wanting to say something to Severo, perhaps thank him one last time. I don't know if your father was right, but he was brave. He extends a hand to Severo, as he did me. I'm sorry that he's not here. Severo blinks hard at the hand, wanting to hate it. This does not come easy for him. He's never been a gentle soul. But he does his best, and he takes the outstretched hand. They shake. But something feels wrong. Cassius won't let go. His face is cold, eyes unforgiving. His body rotates. So fast I can't stop him from jerking back on Severo's hand, pulling my friend's smaller body forward toward him, just as he swivels his hip, bringing Severo to his right armpit like they're dancing, so he can strip Severo's pistol from his leg holster. Severo stumbles, fumbling for the weapon, but it is already gone. Cassius shoves him off and stands behind him with the scorcher pressed to his spine. Severo's eyes are huge, staring at me in fear. Darrow! Cassius, no! I shout. This is my duty! Cassius! Mustang takes a step forward, outstretched hand trembling. He saved your life! Please! On your knees! Cassius says to us. On your gory damn knees! I feel myself teetering on the edge of a precipice, the darkness spreading out before me, whispering to have me back. I can't reach for my razor. Cassius could easily shoot me down before I even pull it. Mustang goes to her knees and motions me to get down. Numbly, I follow her lead. Kill him! Antonia's shouting. Shoot the bastard! Cassius, listen to me. I beg. I said on your knees. Cassius repeats to Severo. My knees? Severo smiles wickedly. A mad gleam in his eye. Stupid gold. You forgot Howler rule number one. Never bow. He snatches up his razor from his right wrist, tries to spin around, but he's too slow. Cassius shoots him in the shoulder, jerking him sideways. The combat vest cracks, blood sprays onto the metal wall. Severo stumbles forward, eyes wild. For gold, Cassius whispers, and fires six more shots point blank into Severo's chest. Chapter 58. Fading Light. Blood erupts from Severo's chest, spraying my face. He stumbles, drops his razor, collapses to his knees, gasping in shock. I rush to him under the muzzle of Cassius's smoking weapon. Severo's grasping at his chest, confused.
Blood dribbles from his mouth, bubbling out through his vest, staining my hands. He coughs it onto me. He's desperate to rise, to laugh it off. But nothing's working. His arms tremble, his breath ragged, eyes huge, fear wild and deep and primal in him as Antonia cackles in delight from her cell. "Don't die," I say frantically. "Don't die, Severo." He shivers in my arms. "Severo, please, please, stay alive, please, Severo." Without a final word, without a plea or a flicker of personality, he goes still, leaking red. Pulse fading away as tears stream down my face, and Antonia howls in mockery. I cry out in horror, at the bleak evil I feel in the world, rocking there on the floor with my best friend. Overwhelmed by this darkness and the hate and the helplessness. Cassius stares pitilessly down at me. "Reap what you sow," he says. I rise with a horrible sob. He strikes me on the side of the head with the scorcher. I don't go down. I take the blow and pull my razor, but he hits me twice more and I fall. He takes my razor from me, holding it to Mustang's throat as she tries to rise. He points the gun at my forehead as I look up at him and is about to pull the trigger. "The Sovereign will want him alive," Mustang says. "Yes," Cassius replies quietly, overcoming his anger. "Yes, you're right. So she can peel him apart till you tell us your battle plans." "Cassius, get me out of this damned cell," Antonia hisses. Cassius moves Severo's body over with his foot and pulls out the pass card to open her door. When Antonia exits her cell, she does so like a queen. Prisoner slippers making little tracks in Severo's fresh blood. She knees Mustang in the face. Mustang goes down. My own vision wavers in and out. Nausea in my gut from a concussion. Warmth from Severo's blood leaking through my shirt along the belly. Antonia sighs above me. "Ugh! The goblin's still leaking everywhere." "Guard them, and get their data pads," Cassius orders. "We need a map." "Where are you going?" "Getting manacles." He tosses her the scorcher. As he disappears around the corner, Antonia crouches over me, considering. She pushes the gun against my lips. "Open?" She punches my testicles. "Open?" Eyes rolling in pain, I open my mouth. She shoves the scorcher barrel inside. The alien metal presses against the back of my throat. Teeth scrape along the black steel. I gag, feel bile coming up. She stares me hatefully in the eyes, crouched over my head, the barrel down my throat as my body convulses, only pulling it out as I vomit on the ground. "Worm." She spits on me and takes our data pads and razors, tossing Severo's to Cassius when he returns from the guard station. They fit me in a prisoner harness, a metallic muzzle and vest combination that interlocks the arms and pins them to my chest so that my fingers are touching the opposite shoulder, and dump me into the container we brought for him, forcing my knees to bend so I fit. I am unable to arrest my fall with my hands, and my head slams on the plastic at the bottom. Then they pile Severo and Mustang in atop me like garbage, and slam shut the crate. Severo's blood drips down my face. My own leaks from the gash on the side of my head. Too dazed to weep or move. "Darrow," Mustang murmurs, "are you all right?" I don't answer her. "You find a map," I hear Cassius ask Antonia through the crate. "And a jammer for cameras," she says. "I'll push. You range if you can manage." "I can manage. Let's go."
The jammer pops and the grav rig moves, taking us along with them. If Severo and Mustang were not atop me, I could crouch and put my back into the lid. But their weight pins me down in the small container. It's hot. Smells like sweat. Hard to breathe. I'm helpless in here. Unable to stop them as they use the path I cleared for Cassius. Unable to stop them as they push us across the deserted hangar, up the ramp, into the ship, and begin pre-flight checks.
Shuttle S-129, you are clear for departure. Stand by for pulse shield deactivation.
The flight officer says over the comm from the distant bridge as the engines prime.
You are go for launch.
Out from the belly of the warship, my enemies smuggle me away from the comfort of my friends, the safety of my people, and the might of my army as it prepares for war. I hold my breath, expecting Orion's voice to come over the comm, to ground the ship, for Ripwings to shoot her engines out. None do. Somewhere, my mother will be making tea, wondering where I am, if I am safe. I pray she cannot feel this pain across the void, this fear that consumes me despite all my vaunted strength and foolish bluster. I'm afraid, despite what I know. Not just for myself, but for Mustang. I hear Antonia and Cassius speaking beyond the crate. Cassius has broadcast an emergency signal from the craft. A few moments later, a cold voice crackles over the comm.
Sarpedon Shuttle, this is the LDC assault runner Kronos. You have transmitted an Olympic distress signal. Please identify yourself.
Kronos, this is the morning night. Clearance code 787 Echo Alpha 91227. I have escaped from imprisonment aboard the enemy's flagship and am requesting escort and docking clearance. Antonia Au Severus Julii is with me. We have valuable cargo. The enemy is in pursuit.
There's a pause. Register, code accepted. Hold on the comm. The next voice you hear will be the Protean Knight's. A moment later, Aja's voice rumbles through the ship, filling me with dread. So she did survive the waste to find her way back home.
Cassius, you're alive.
For now.
What is your cargo? The Reaper, Virginia, and the body of Ares, Antonia says excitedly.
The body. I want to see them.
Boots thud toward my container. The top opens and Cassius hauls Mustang out. Then he hauls me out and tosses me to the ground before the hologram. Small and dark in the holographic projector, Aja watches us with otherworldly calm. Antonia keeps Severo's gun trained on my head as Cassius pulls up Severo's head by his mohawk to show his face.
Gory hell, Bologna,
Aja says, excitement entering her voice.
Gory hell! You've done it!
The Sovereign will want to see you in the Citadel. Before I do, I need you to assure me that no harm will come to Virginia.
What are you talking about?
Antonia asks, wary how close Cassius stands near her with his razor.
She's a traitor.
And she'll be imprisoned, Cassius says. Not executed, not tortured. I need your word, Aja, or I turn this ship around. Darrow killed your sister. Do you want vengeance or not?
You have my word, Aja says. No harm will befall her. I am sure Octavia will agree. We need her to settle things with the Rim.
We're sending squadrons to intercept your pursuit. Redirect to Vector 41-13-25. Circle the moon and await contact from the Lion of Mars for docking instructions. We can't clear your ship to land moonside. But Arch-Governor Augustus will be joining the Sovereign in the Citadel within the hour. I don't think he'll mind offering you a ride down.
The Arch-Governor is here, Cassius asks.
I don't see his ships.
Of course he's here, Aja replies. He knew Dara was never going to Mars. His entire fleet is on the far side of Luna, waiting for them to attack my father's. This is his trap.
Chapter 59 The Lion of Mars. Mustang and I are dragged down the cargo plank of the shuttle by obsidians in black armor, each nearly as large as Ragnar, and wearing the badge of the lion. I try to kick up at them, but they jam 2-meter-long iron pikes into my stomach, electrocuting me. My muscles cramp, electricity screaming through me. They toss me down to the deck, pulling me up by my hair, so I'm on my knees, staring down at the body of Severo. Mercifully, his eyes are shut, his mouth pink from smeared blood. Mustang tries to rise. A muffled thump as an obsidian hits her in the stomach, putting her back on her knees, gasping for breath. Cassius has been forced to his knees as well. Antonia joins Lilith, who stands before us in black armor, a screaming gold skull on either shoulder, and another in the center of the breastpiece. Down her sides are human rib bones embedded in the armor, the first bone rider in all her barbaric finery. The jackal Severo, head shaved, quiet eyes sunken in a small, pinched face that likes little of what it sees in the world. Behind her tower 10 young peerless scarred, heads shaved like hers for war. "Scan them," she orders. "What the hell is this?" Cassius asks. "Jackal's orders." Lilith watches carefully as the golds scan me. Cassius suffers the indignity as Lilith continues. "Boss doesn't want tricks." "I have the sovereign's warrant," he says. "We're to take the Reaper and Virginia to the Citadel." "Understood. We received the same orders. Bound there soon." She motions Cassius to stand as her men clear them. No bugs or devices or radiation tracking. Cassius dusts his knees off. I remain on mine as Lilith peers at Severo, who one of the obsidians has dragged down the ramp. She feels his